Hey, I'm Jeremy Loeb with WCQS News. You're about to hear an interview with Democratic North Carolina Representative John Ager. He's running for re-election in North Carolina's House District 115 in Buncombe County. His opponent is Republican Frank Moretz. You can hear an interview with Moretz separate from this. Representative Ager, thanks so much for coming back in and talking to me.
Thank you.
And, you know, we just ended up the short session not too long ago. Now, you're running for re-election in House District 115, representing Eastern and Northern Buncombe County. Why did you decide to run again?
Well, I ran originally because I just felt like the political process in Raleigh was not going that well. I was unhappy with the policy coming out, but I was also unhappy with the way, you know, the politics were going down there. And that's unfortunately still a part of what Raleigh's all about. And, you know, you're hearing from constituents all over the state about their unhappiness with the way politics is being conducted in Raleigh. And to be honest, it's taking the courts to unravel some of the bad politics.
You won your last election, a very tight election, by under 500 votes.
493.
So it's a tight race that you're going to have with Frank Moretz.
Correct.
It's expected to be tight anyway.
Right.
Why do you feel like you've earned a second run?
Well, the things I have pursued, you know, some of the things I'm particularly interested in are rural issues. I live on a farm, Hickory Nut Gap Farm. In our state, as it currently is progressing economically, our big cities like Raleigh and Charlotte, and to some extent Asheville, are doing pretty well. But our rural areas, which have lost plants and where agriculture is still very important, are not doing that great. So one of my particular interests is helping those rural areas. And my district includes parts of those areas. I've lived for, you know, 45 years in Fairview, and our community has gone from a rural agricultural community to more or less a bedroom community. One of the things I'm really proud of was working hard to bring hemp into our state as a way for some of our, hopefully for some of our small farmers here in the mountains to have a new crop, and maybe a crop that would even be able to replace tobacco. I continue to fight hard for education. North Carolina has always progressed when we invested in education. I am also upset about the fact that our state brand now is discrimination, the whole HB2 problem. And I think big corporations, when they consider coming to the state, that many of their people will say, let's just take North Carolina off the list. Mm-hmm. So I've done a lot of things. I'm in the minority party. I'm hoping after November that we will have a much stronger position. Hopefully we'll have a Democratic governor and a lot more seats in the House, and I can do more things for my county.
Yeah, and it seems like the rest of the delegation from Buncombe County is going to stay largely the same. Many people are running unopposed, including Brian Turner.
Yeah, that's
who
amazing.
Found out he would have been in a tight race had the Republicans put someone up in his district, and yet they failed to do so. So that's kind of a shocker for him.
Yeah.
And so your race will be the one to watch, definitely, in Buncombe County, I think.
I think so.
So you talked about the Asheville Districts Bill, which we'll talk a little bit about, but you talked about how you felt like the last time when you won your race, it was in part because of past meddling by the state in local affairs.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to play in again this time, especially with what happened in the short session?
I just think areas, you know, local governments like we have here in the mountains, all over the mountains, but especially here in Asheville, we just don't appreciate the bad politics of an overbearing state government. It's been a part of the Republican platform to encourage local government, to encourage ordinances that are particularly geared to local areas. But it's bad politics. When they don't like a place, when they don't like Charlotte because of HB2, they don't like the way the politics are going in Asheville, they just want to come in and change it. And that is so overbearing, and it's without any consultation with local officials. And, you know, to be quite blunt, I think Tom Apodaca symbolized that better than anybody. And I was thrilled that so many of my Republican colleagues in the House joined us to stop that Asheville districting bill.
Yeah, and that was extraordinary to listen to. At least I was here in a studio listening to that take place. And you offered an amendment. Susan Fisher offered one, and Brian Turner offered one. All of those were voted down. And so it really looked to me like the bill was really set to pass. And then all of a sudden it didn't. What is your take on what happened during that course of that over an hour of debate?
Yeah, that you can't overemphasize how extraordinary it was. I too thought, you know, this is just a party line vote. We were told by the League of Municipalities, who was on our side, that Tom Apodaca has the power and he's going to see this thing through. There's really not much you can do. We did our amendments. It came time for the vote. We made our arguments, so just along those lines I just talked about, that do you really want a state government in Raleigh that meddles in local government? Do you really want that? Do you want a bill passed that was sold as one that was not controversial and was being manipulated by Senator Apodaca in the background? Do you really want that? And I'd like to put out a thank you to our neighboring House member Josh Dobson, who I think you've interviewed here, mm-hmm. who first got up and said, I've been looking at this bill. I don't want politicians in Raleigh telling us in Marion how we do our votes. I'm voting against this thing. And then a cascade of Republicans changed their mind. Mm-hmm. We adjourned temporarily right after that. Somehow on the last day of the session, the Asheville bill became the centerpiece of what everyone was talking about. I went to get a sandwich and ran into a reporter, and he pulled me aside and he said, I just want you to know, I've been here for 3 years. I have never seen that happen before. People were changing their minds on the House floor. We still thought that Senator Apodaca could take the Asheville bill and jam it into another bill that the House really wanted passed. And when it turned out that he couldn't really do that, he just adjourned the Senate and said, you know, we're going home. I tell you, it was an extraordinary evening. It's most fun I had down there, to be honest.
And had you seen that before?
No, I hadn't seen anything like that before. Once everything gets to the House floor, it is assumed that the majority party has the votes. And this was the first time in 2 years where that didn't happen, where people changed their minds and said, enough is enough of Raleigh meddling.
Now, I saw you wrote on Facebook shortly after that it had restored your faith in the process. Well, why did you say that?
I felt like it took a lot of courage for so many Republicans to buck what had been arranged. They were taking a chance. They were going up against their leadership. Those kind of things have consequences. But they did it because they felt like it was the right thing to do. And that's what restored my faith.
And so we should remind listeners what that was all about. That was a bill to divide Asheville into six districts for the purpose of electing city council members. It was opposed by you and the rest of the delegation of Buncombe County, except for Senator Tom Apodaca.
Correct.
But as you said to me shortly after this was introduced, you weren't necessarily opposed to the idea of districts. You were opposed more to the way that this was introduced. So looking ahead, is there any future for districting the city of Asheville?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I agree with that. I think most cities Asheville size tend to have a combination of at-large seats and district seats. We may be getting to the point where that might be a good idea. And my understanding is that city council is going to figure out a way to take a look at that. How do you gauge public opinion? There's a lot of different ways you can do it. You know, how you draw the districts is important. That was another thing that was irritating about Apodaca's bill. He's just going to draw the districts. They didn't make a lot of sense. Some people thought they were for the purpose of getting rid of certain council members. It needs to be a local issue. I'm hoping that after the election that I can get to work and help council look at that. Is it time for a change? Are there some districts that would make sense? I really like it when council has a broad range of views. Maybe some geographical diversity would be good.
And is that something that the city council has the authority to do themselves? I mean, like, does it need to happen in Raleigh? If the idea originates from the city council, does it then need to go through the legislature to take effect?
My understanding is that is true. You know, we're a what we call a Dillon Rule state or a Mother May I state,
right,
where our local governments are all creatures of the General Assembly. Not all states are that way, but ours is. If the city could come to an agreement on a new arrangement, there'd have to be legislation to make that happen.
Mm. And so this kind of goes along with a pattern that the General Assembly had before this bill failed. They were successful in redistricting Wake County, the Greensboro City Council. And a number of these, as you mentioned, are getting thrown out by the courts. Also, the huge voter ID bill that they passed in 2013, early voting, things like that are all getting kind of stymied by the federal courts right now. What's your take on all these election changes, and what would you like to see happen in November?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's kind of at the heart of our democracy. I think the North Carolina General Assembly has about a 15% approval rate. That should be a signal that we need to do some changing. Much of the election laws that are being thrown out are being done so because they look to be racial in their intent, to gerrymander black voters in districts and things like that. Going forward, I think we really need some strong election reform. We need to end gerrymandering once and for all, whatever that looks like. I think the House would pass a commission to do that rather than allowing the political people complete reign. Mm-hmm. Once again, here it is almost 2017, and our districts that were drawn in 2010 are being litigated at great expense. We had to change the U.S. congressional districts and reschedule those entire elections. We just found out we're going to have to change our state Senate and House districts. I don't know if that will affect me or not, but there wasn't enough time to change them before November, so they're going to be done once the new session starts. It's another way that people lose faith in their government. And I don't think people really, they have a less of a relationship with their elected officials. Most people don't know what districts they live in, and they get changed, and it's just too much.
Your race is unique almost in that you have an opponent and it's expected to be a tight race. Many people are running without opponents, or they're running in districts that are so gerrymandered that they have no chance of losing unless they did something really terrible.
Yeah, and that's right. And, it's good for me to have an opponent. It makes me think through the issues. I think it's healthy. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons our state legislature is not healthy is people, have no worry about keeping their seats. And that's especially true in the Senate, which to my mind is a much more sort of arrogant body, sort of a king of the hill place. And I think members of the House realize that when they overreach politically, that there's going to be some consequences, where the Senate doesn't much feel like that.
Do you think what happened with the Asheville districts bill, where you just thank Josh Dobson for crossing party lines to help defeat that bill, do you think that that's a sign of things to come? Have you been working on relationships across the aisle, and do you think that that played a role in the bill's defeat?
Absolutely. One of the things I've really enjoyed about being in the General Assembly is just to get to meet all the people. It's a people place. When I began to see some of the votes being changed on the other side, I realized, these are people that I have become friends with, that we talk about things we don't always agree, but as people, we're friends and we respect each other. I think that gave many of them the comfort zone to do the right thing.
Well, let's talk about House Bill 2. That's been a huge issue in the state since it was passed. The NBA announced that it was moving the All-Star Game from Charlotte. There's been a number of economic repercussions from that bill. Let's separate the economic harm from it. Where would you stand on the bill itself without the impact that it's having? I realize it's really impossible to separate what's happening with the economics, but we'll talk about that separately.
Well, this was a prime example of bad politics. No other way to say it. We were called down to Raleigh March 23rd. I'm on the Judiciary 4 Committee that first heard the bill. It's a kind of an unwritten rule that all bills should be online the night before so we can read them. This bill is not online. I was standing next to Representative Dan Bishop, and I sort of grumped to him. I said, Dan, where is this bill? I didn't realize that he was probably the primary author of it, and he made some excuse. We got the bill at 10 o'clock. We had to beg the chairman of the Judiciary 4 Committee, please give us 5 minutes to read it, which he granted. We read it. The room was full of media, as you might imagine. It was full of people wanting to speak on both sides of it. It was very complicated to read. It was very legal. And we had a short debate. We heard from people there in the room. I voted against it in committee. I felt like, in the very least, the process was broken. This was no way to pass major legislation, not allowing voters and journalists to have a look at it. Went to the House floor, went to the Senate. Governor signed it that night. Very bad way to do bills. And to be honest, I voted against it. There's risk in that. There were many people on my side that said, you know, this bill, all it really is a trap. It's a way to get the voters out in November. Be careful, be careful. And I said, I'm sorry. You know, I'm 67 years old. You know, send me back home. I'm trying to do the right thing here. Mm-hmm. This bill is discriminatory. Every day we say the Pledge of Allegiance with liberty and justice for all. I think that is, to me, the greatest gift we as in America have. And I just say, I can't vote for this thing. In the end, it turned out to be so many of the corporations, especially the tech corporations, that said, you know, we can't bring our people to North Carolina if you're passing legislation like this. So when you travel now and you say where you're from, you know, inevitably this bill comes up, and it's a shame because we're a better state than that.
So you're saying, like, when you first voted against the bill, you had to worry, was this going to harm you in some way by voting against it? Because I guess, you know, you're in a pretty 50-50 district. And all right, so are you saying the bill was sort of designed, you called it a trap, a sort of designed to make you vote on something that would have made you look bad? Or
yeah, I mean, this is a bill. It has perfect advertising possibilities of, you know, scary looking men. And of course, I also wrote an editorial right after I voted. I said why I voted against HB2. My first sentence, I think, was it's not really about the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. It was about the other discriminatory language that I think the bill designers hoped that the bathroom thing would, people wouldn't look beyond that. And, you know, it was an easy thing to kind of talk about. And you still hear common sense, but it's anything but common sense, the way that bill was written. And I'm just hoping with a good election in November that we can repeal the whole darn thing and begin to bring North Carolina back in the eyes of the world as a progressive southern state.
And let's say Roy Cooper wins the governorship, and I guess it's expected that Democrats would not then take the House or the Senate, but they may gain seats. Do you see it as a possibility that HB 2 could be repealed with those types of numbers? I mean, is there enough Republican opposition to HB 2 that you've heard, maybe anecdotally, on the House floor?
I think it's going to be very, very hard, because I haven't heard anecdotally of any Republican who would vote to repeal it, but there may be some out there. So I think even to introduce a bill to repeal and then to have it pass, you would probably need more Democrats in both the House and the Senate. We are hoping this go around to have at least 4 or 5 more Democrats in the House, which will at least allow us to sustain a veto if Governor Cooper, if he's elected, could wield as a governor. So that's our hope.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned education funding. Legislators passed raises for teachers in this past session, but that wasn't without criticism. A lot of Democrats, a lot of people on the left said they didn't go far enough. What's your position on where we are as far as education funding and teacher pay?
Yeah, I still think it's inadequate. I voted for the budget in large part because there were teacher raises. It was, of course, an election year effort to appease that issue. One thing we know without a doubt, in the past for North Carolina, investing in education is what turned us from a pretty poor tobacco and textile state into a modern economy. These countries around the world that are investing in education, they do it by honoring and investing in their teachers. We need to bring back the Teaching Fellows Program It was a great way to bring high-achieving high school students into the teaching profession, honor them. Many of them had great careers in education. To get rid of that program just made no sense to me. We need to reward people with master's degrees and board certification. One of the things that surprised me is the kind of political war between the charter schools and the traditional public schools. It's pretty fierce down there. I have three grandchildren at Evergreen, so I feel that one pretty hard. We need to support all public education, charter and public. We need to require that private schools getting vouchers be certified and do not discriminate. Many of these schools that are getting vouchers are just in church basements and are not schools to be proud of. I was sad to see the Supreme Court validate vouchers, but that's what we've got, and let's make the program work. So interestingly, it's the money is really important for teachers, but it's when you hear teachers talk, it's as much about their sense of honor and that they're contributing to society. You know, you're never motivated completely by money if you're a teacher. They feel dishonored, and I just feel like it's partly our fault in Raleigh.
Yeah, so you mentioned a few of the things that I was going to ask you about with charter schools and the voucher program. And so are you all right with the expansion of charter schools? And then as far as the voucher program, you said this is the system we've got, so we should make it better. But if you had the opportunity to roll back the voucher program, would you do so?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a bad use of public tax money.
Now, teachers and, of course, everyone are affected by taxes and the economy, of course. And what we saw with taxes over the course of the legislature was a reduction in the income tax, but an expansion of things that are taxed, you know, sales taxes and things like that. How do you think the legislature did as far as taxes?
Yeah, I consider income inequality one of the mega issues we face as a society, not just in North Carolina, but all across the country. Since 2013, the top 1% of North Carolina taxpayers have saved, on average, over $15,000 each in taxes. The bottom 20% have saved $10 on average. This is clearly a tax system designed to promote wealthy people keeping most of their money. On top of that, we've had an expansion of sales taxes, many to people, you know, working people who work on your car, your transmission people. They're now having to pay sales tax on their labor or charge sales tax. I think this is going backwards. If you really think income inequality is a problem going forward, then this is a regressive tax system. And I think we need to change directions. The other tax policy that's been very damaging along these lines is that we no longer have an earned income tax credit designed to help working people who are on the lower end of the work scale. So There's lots we can do. We need to first see that this really is a problem, which it is.
Let's shift to the environment a bit. There were a number of environmental issues recently. Well, first, there's the Duke Energy Asheville plant. They're converting their coal-fired plant over to natural gas. Where do you stand on that effort?
I'm actually a big renewables person. I think there's great hope in renewable energy. I'm really actually okay. I didn't imagine that we would lose the coal plant this quickly. Gas is cleaner for the air, so that's a plus. It's still, most of that gas comes from fracking, which not fracking in North Carolina, but fracking from other places. Mm-hmm. We're already facing problems with pipelines being built to bring that gas in. It's cheap. That's why Duke changed. So, you know, I'm okay with the cleaner air. I was upset that the solar tax credit was dropped in North Carolina. We're number three or number four in solar energy. Down east especially, I mentioned rural areas. Solar installations have been a boon to many of our eastern North Carolina rural areas. One of the things that really surprised me was the kind of vehement feeling against renewable energy and the sort of fossil fuel versus renewable energy. And I sort of chalked it up to the ALEC conferences that so many people go to down there. And ALEC is about nothing if it's not about promoting fossil fuels.
I see. And there was an effort to block wind farms across much of the state.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that didn't make it through.
Yeah, it was right there at the end. It was a scary bill, and they designed it because of our military using so much of that eastern area for flight training, and they said these 10-story wind turbines would be dangerous for them. I'm imagining that that's going to come up again. Mm-hmm. But it pretty much took most of eastern North Carolina off of any chance of having wind turbines.
And so as a member of the minority party, if a bill like that comes up that you're opposed to, what can you do besides voting against it, obviously, but what can you do to try to stop it in its tracks?
Well, you get your own party on board, and then you go out and look for people that you think would support you. Mm-hmm. Here's another shout out from me to Chuck McGrady, who has a very good record on environmental issues. He's kind of our go-to guy. How many Republicans can you get to join us in fighting this? So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, and he may have a more senior role as he moves forward.
He does.
Especially with the retirement of Senator Apodaca.
Yeah, we're losing a lot of legislators.
Yeah.
And people might be interested to know that part of the reason is that it's a money loser down there. You know, you get paid less than $14,000 a year. It takes up all your time. North Carolina is now the ninth biggest state in the union. It takes a lot of management, government management, to keep us kind of humming along economically. It's not easy, and I'm a history guy, so I'm just thrilled to be a member of a government legislature. But it does take its toll.
Is there any effort underway to raise the pay of legislators, even though, you know, it can be politically unpopular, especially when the approval ratings for the legislature are so far down? Is that something that they can do? Because there is the argument made that the low pay limits it to people who are retired, who have the time to go down there.
Yeah, there's. I heard rumors about it. It's something I'm not going to get real interested in it. But you're right. We're getting a lot of the same people my age. To run for office, it's not only the sacrifice of holding the office, but it's, the first question you're asked is, how much money can you raise? And that's another place where our politics are broken. We need people from all walks of life, from all income levels down there. Otherwise, we get into this groupthink that is not healthy, and we make poor decisions. And it's a shame we've gotten to the place where you have to be able to raise lots of money in order to serve in Raleigh.
And is that what your weeks have been like since the election season got into gear? What's the campaign been like for you so far?
My job is to raise money, mm-hmm. Make phone calls. And, I kind of resist it. I tend to think, I'll just go out and work on the farm for a few minutes and then come back. And it's hard. And I just resent the fact that money and campaigns are what they are. And But that's the way we do it. I need to hold this seat, so I'm going to do what it takes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you debated with your challenger, Dr. Moretz, pretty recently. And just from the article that I read in the Citizen Times, it said that you guys agreed more often than you disagreed on a number of things. Where do you think you guys differ?
Well, I'm not sure Dr. Moretz realizes that when you go down to Raleigh, he will be a member of the Republican caucus. I can tell you, they put huge pressure on you to hew the party line. So which party you represent down there matters a great deal. My understanding is that Dr. Moretz's interests are in issues concerning anesthesiologists, medical anesthesiologists, which he's retired from and did quite well in that field. I sort of worry that as we try to make our healthcare system better, try to wring out, we have the most expensive by far medical system that has mediocre results at best. As we try to, slowly but surely make our medical system better, I worry that interest groups like that are going to hold us back. I think that he's really pretty much a special interest candidate.
Special interest candidate. Yeah. What do you mean by that?
He's interested in medical, in these medical issues, mm-hmm. and that's what he was the legislative affairs member of a anesthesiology PAC, as I understand it. And so I think that's his real interest.
Mm-hmm. And as far as medical issues, Medicaid expansion and that sort of thing, I assume there will still be efforts to expand Medicaid, but they may not go anywhere. What do you hope to see as far as Medicaid in the next session?
Yeah. The easiest legislation we can pass, and I introduced this bill in the short session, is to expand Medicaid. It brings in money that we have sent to Washington, our money, comes back $2 billion a year or so. It creates enormous numbers of jobs. You know, most people have heard these arguments. It strengthens all of our hospitals, especially our rural hospitals, and it saves lives. I mean, their estimates of 12 to 1500 lives a year are lost because we haven't expanded Medicaid. The latest figure I saw was that if we expanded Medicare, our medical premiums would go down 7% because those people now would go to the hospital and have insurance.
Well, you know, another area where you and Dr. Moretz may disagree is just, you know, like you mentioned, party. So maybe in how you guys view, and I'm going to ask him this tomorrow, also just how he views the other races that are taking place, especially the one at the very top of the ticket, the presidential race. What do you think about that so far? Are you a Hillary Clinton supporter? Do you think she's a good candidate? What do you think of Donald Trump? That sort of thing.
Yeah, I will join the chorus that says Donald Trump is unfit to be president. I can't imagine a president that just shoots off his mouth the way he does. I believe Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, is probably the most qualified presidential candidate we've had in my lifetime. I can't quite think who would be even second at this point. Maybe Lyndon Johnson or I don't know, but she's dealt with foreign policy. Most of this email stuff and all of the messaging is political static. She's been around a long time. She and her husband, you know, you're going to have stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I just think she'll be a wonderful president.
So you're not too concerned about the emails or the Clinton Foundation stuff that people have been talking about the past few weeks?
Clinton Foundation is a fabulous organization. I understand the conflict of interest problems, and she's trying to deal with that. But, you know, that foundation is saving lives all over the world. It should be celebrated. Most of that is just political static, in my opinion.
What do you think about the Cooper-McCrory race? I mean, what do you think of the job that McCrory has done and the job that Cooper has done? He, you know, he's been attorney general for, I think, 14?
16, I think.
Yeah, 16 years, long time.
Yeah. I think Roy Cooper's a fabulous candidate. He's sort of a real straight arrow guy right out of the kind of Jim Hunt, Terry Sanford mold. He's going to support education. He came out day one saying HB2 is unconstitutional. I'm not going to do the state's litigation on that. And, you know, by the way, I think we spent $1.3 million litigating HB2, or the state spent that defending HB2. Cooper's a great candidate. You know, and I'm a Democrat. I'm partisan. Mm-hmm. But when I went to Raleigh, I expected the governor's office to be very involved in policy in the General Assembly. I expected, you know, daily emails, visits from his staff to my office. I thought he would be a strong voice in the conversation. I supported two of his vetoes in 2015. Didn't get any support or encouragement from his office. When Jim Hunt was governor, he said over and over again the three things he wanted to get done. I've never heard Governor McCrory say the three things he wants to get done. He's pretty much running this go-around on trying to find legislation that was passed with the hard work in the General Assembly that he's going to either take credit for or ignore. Even the Republicans, Tom Apodaca among them, said he's irrelevant in the work of the General Assembly. I can't do anything more than characterize his time in office as a disappointment.
Mm. What about the race between Deborah Ross and Richard Burr for U.S. Senate?
Yeah, that's a fascinating one. I've met with Senator Burr a few times in Washington, and you know, I really didn't suspect that he could be challenged. This is a strange political year. I've been to several events with Deborah Ross. She's a strong candidate. She speaks well. And again, she puts out there her agenda item, the things she wants to get done. It looks like that's going to be a close race. this election year, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, those are my questions. Are there any issues that we didn't get to that you wanted to highlight? And especially looking ahead, what are some of the things that you hope to do in the next session if you get that chance?
Yeah. We're always wanting better and more jobs here in the mountains. On some level, that's an infrastructure problem. That's something the General Assembly works on. We did pass the Connect NC bonds, which will help. We have resolved the plan for the I-26 connector, which I was glad. And I was glad for the plan that was chosen. Had a lot of local input, and I think it's a great plan. My job is to try to help spur that along, make sure we get the money to get that project started. Going into the future, we're going to need to invest in other transportation options, and we need to do that wisely and cost-effectively. One other thing I'd like to work hard on is that's an economic development issue is getting broadband into all of our haulers here in the mountains so that people can make a living at their computers. We have, you know, by protecting our environment, by creating a wonderful lifestyle in the mountains, it's our number one draw for people and companies and workers to come here. We got to preserve that. Tourism obviously is huge. I was pleased we were able to raise the room tax and be able to invest some of that money in local infrastructure. And again, I'm really interested in rural life. One of my little things that's not little out in the countryside, but big, especially in the mountains, especially in Buncombe County, is to reduce the tax-exempt status for farmers from a $10,000 gross income to $5,000. You know, there's other things, but I'd also like to see us fully fund our land trusts, the Farmland Preservation Program, Clean Water Management Trust Funds. We need to keep our rural landscape in the mountains rural, or else we're not going to be the tourist draw and the job draw that we need to be.
Is there any message that you would send out to your constituents or would-be voters?
Well, you're great. I think I've worked hard for my constituents. I'm looking forward to getting out and meeting as many of you as you can. I'm receptive. One of the things I love doing is learning good policy. I'm all about good policy. I'm not all about being a partisan person in Raleigh. I want good process and good policy. So thank you.
Well, and I appreciate your willingness to come in. Whenever I've invited you to come in for an interview, you've always been accessible, which I appreciate.
And I appreciate the great work you do to help our community learn about these things.
All right. Well, Representative Ager, thank you so much.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It. And good luck in November.
Thank you so much.